Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the CONCACAF Champions League Review Show.
Everyone, and welcome once again to the special edition of the 40 Teams Fire Internet Soccer Show, the CONCACAF Champions League Group Stage Review Show, as we take a look at those sides and from MLS in Mexico to talk about this past week of matches. And of course, you have to say that those certain teams that were probably ticketed to go to the knockout stage next year, around March, I believe, a bit disappointed in how they performed in their games. A bit disappointed in what they did when they performed at home or on the road, especially Montreal, because, you know, the way Montreal has started this season, how they came out of the gate, and, you know, they've been leading the Eastern Conference for a while, for a good while. And then while everything seemed to be put in place that not just winning the Amway Canadian Championship, but just how they were leading, it just looked like that Montreal was going to, I don't know, maybe steamroll through the competition in their group. I know, of course, they had the San Jose Earthquakes in their group. They took on this side named Herdea from Guatemala. And even though that match was a little bit, maybe a little bit wishy-washy when it comes to the official running the match, officiating that match, I forget where the official originally came from, but you thought that Montreal was going to get at least 4 points, maybe the full 6 points before they took their break on August the 28th when San Jose Earthquakes went down to Heredia. And then you see this result by Montreal and you're thinking to yourself, did they make this long trek across the country for nothing, or shall we say across the continent for nothing? Because even though they were down 1-0 at the beginning, early on in the first half, and it looked like they had some opportunities to get back in there, it just didn't seem they had the same oomph like they did early on in this group stage action on the 7th of August. And especially they looked pretty good against the Heredia in the 21st of August, but unfortunately nothing happened for them. So that's just one of those things that you see that are just really, really upsets you, because you thought Montreal's, now nothing against San Jose, nothing against the Earthquakes, you know, it looked like they were done and dusted after two games, but give them credit because the Earthquakes came back hard and they fought hard. And obviously it's not so much it's the points, even though Heredia is still with two wins and 6 points, they have a game in hand right now on both San Jose and Montreal. So they have two games to go. Montreal will be going back home next week to take on Heredia over at Stade Saputo, and maybe the Impact not just get a win, but we'll see if they can score some goals here, because at the moment they're in dead last with a -3 on the differential, and that's the big tiebreaker right there when you have these situations in the CONCACAF Champions League. We'll see what happens there. Sporting Kansas City, and, you know, they dominated their road games. Both were 2-0. They had a 4-4, four goals for, and nil against, or +4 on the differential, still a +4, but they had a 1-1 draw against Real Esteli, and Esteli gets that goal early in the match. And even though, once again, we know it's a long Major League Soccer season, still, you would like to think that Sporting Kansas City, taking on Real Esteli from Nicaragua, that they should have put them away. They should have scored a lot. They should have scored on and often. And it didn't happen. And maybe it was a bit frustrating for Kansas City. I know it definitely looked excruciating for Peter Vermees. It really looked excruciating for Peter Vermees over there on the bench at live at the sporting park, but still, though, I mean, this is one of those situations that these games, you got to make sure, as the favorites in the group, that you got to go out there and you got to put these types of games away and not worry so much about who your next opponent is going to be. And Sporting Kansas City will be hosting Club Deportivo Olimpia at Sporting Park. True, they need the result because it looks like probably a draw would send Sporting Kansas City into the knockout stages. But still, this is one of those things where it's just really, really tough. It's really, really tough to see them. Let's be honest. You figured they would go ahead as well. And for the LA Galaxy, once again, it's not a problem because they're deep. They're very, very deep, LA. And good for them, because even though before then they only played one game in this group stage, and that was on August 20th against Cartagena, it was a 2-0 win, a 1-0 victory over Isidro Metapan, and now the Galaxy go on the road into Costa Rica and into El Salvador. So once again, we're seeing some action here. And as we take a look once again at the standings, here it is in Group A. Arabe Unido defeating W Connection by a score of 2-0. They are now the leaders in Group A. Houston has a game in hand on both W Connection and Arabe Unido. So it's right now Arabe Unido 6 points, Houston Dynamo 4 points, W Connection 1 point. You would have to say W Connection is done, and there's no way W Connection is going to get out of the group. Group B, Sporting Kansas City, they're in first place with 7 points, with Olimpia of Honduras with 3, Real Esteli with 1, that they're eliminated. There's no way they can come out of the blue unless they upset Olimpia. Group C, Herediano at the moment, 6 points with a +4 in the differential, but they have scored 5 more goals than Cruz Azul, but Cruz Azul has only played 2 games. So they have a game in hand on both Herediano and Valencia of Haiti. So we'll see what happens there. But at the moment, Herediano leading Group C with 6 points and a +10 on the goals for. Cruz Azul in second place, also 6 points. Both of them are wins. They have +5. And Valencia of Haiti is in last in that group with 4. Club America leading with 6 points. Sporting San Miguelito of Panama in second place with 3. And Aluenza also with 3. But I believe Aluenza should be in second because their differential is at an even. And Miguelito is at a -3. So just going to have to reset that. I think sometimes Excel's a little funny. You try to, you know, make sure you get everything correctly before you get on the air and talk about these things. But, you know, it's really interesting to see. Yep, there we go. Much better now. Excuse me. Out of the Wednesday is in second place on the even differential. San Miguelito is in last with the -3. And that's Group D. In Group E, once again, Herdia from Guatemala is in first place with 6 points. San Jose Earthquakes, they jump into second place with 3 points and a +1 on the differential. Montreal also with 3 points, dead last, -3 on the differential. So that's not good right there for Montreal. Toluca of Mexico, looks like they're going to go to the group stage, even though Comunicaciones from Guatemala still has 2 games yet to be played, and one of them is against Toluca. But Toluca right now, 9 points in first. Comunicaciones of Guatemala with 3 points in second. Caledonia of Trinidad, dead last with 0 points. And in Group G, Club Tijuana in first place with 7 points. Luis Angel Firpo of El Salvador, 4 points in second place. And Club Deportivo Victoria of Honduras in dead last, 0 points. they are officially eliminated. And then, of course, the LA Galaxy with two games played, 6 points, first place. Cartagena's in second place with 4 points, three games played. And Isidro Metapan of El Salvador, three games played, 1 point, and they are officially eliminated from the top spot. So it's one of those things where, once again, you know, it's a tight – this is a very, very tight. You wish they would go back to the four groups of four, but right now they have eight groups of three. So it's just to make it tighter and tougher, and we'll see what happens as we move along here. And going to the Houston Dynamo, and they didn't play last week, but you still have to say – you still have to say that they have – an opportunity here, big, big opportunity to reclaim that top spot in their group. Because this is the situation that they're in. And we know it's been a rough season in MLS for Houston. And they are still, I believe, still in the playoff race as I take a look at the standings. In MLS, they're in fourth place right now with 40 points. Not a bad record. So they're going to probably be in the playoff against Chicago, depending on what goes on with both Philadelphia and New England. Even Columbus has an opportunity to try and make that playoff push into that wild card match. Montreal right now, they have two games in hand on New York. Sporting Kansas City has a game in hand on New York as well. So does Houston. But this is a situation where league form and Champions League form are not mixing right now for some of these clubs. And if they can right the ship somehow, which I think they will, I do believe they're going to right the ship somehow. But you never know. And I know, Daniel, how can you say this because you're a New York fan? And I understand all that, but the point is simple. It's about what you're going to do in international competition and what you can do once you're able to draw against some of these teams going into the knockout stage and where you finish and how you finish. I think that is very important as well. I'll be honest. I think Club Tijuana and Club Toluca from Mexico is going to be tough. Club America is definitely going to be tough. That's for sure. Cruz Azul has been tough as well. You remember those past Champions League group stage matches when they took on Real Salt Lake before they went to this whole situation. This is going to be a very, very tough Champions League action, and it's never easy. Everyone will have their day. Will a club rise to the occasion, and not just rise to the occasion, will they find a way to regroup and get the necessary point or 3 points that they need to get into the group stage match, excuse me, to the knockout stage? Because that's the big question right there. That's the big question that is on everyone's minds. And definitely, we'll see what happens when we get to October, not just next week, but what happens when we get to that final group stage week in October and who will solidify the spots. And that will be huge for these clubs representing Major League Soccer very, very quickly. Great show for you tonight. Again, we're going to have on Lisa Erickson at the same time, Arcadio Marcuzzi from Le Footer. We'll have Adam Serrano on from the LA Galaxy Insider. And, of course, my good friend John Jagu covers Mexico League X on all the clubs in Mexico as well as the Mexican national team. We will hold off any questions for World Cup qualifying. We'll get to that when we do in October. But joining me right now, gentleman that needs no introduction, of course. He is the man that runs Down the Byline blog, and that is my good friend Mike Kuhn. Kuhny, you know, Kansas City, and I know the MLS season's a long season. It's a tedious process, but I think you would have to agree, Peter Vermes knew what he got himself into when they won the Open Cup last year, and to see them, after two fantastic road matches and a plus four scoring goals, to me, this is a blip on the radar that signaled a big problem, in my opinion.
I mean, it can, but if watching all the games this year, that's how we play at home for the most part, unfortunately. If we don't get an early goal, the more we let inferior competition sit back and defend, and the longer that happens, the more questionable the result comes. I mean, we've made a habit out of it. Look at Richmond back in 2011. Look at Orlando this year. Look at look at all the teams that have come in, sat back, let us just pressure, and then they hit us on the counter or they hit us on a set piece. It's the way Kansas City plays at home, unfortunately. It's the way they play under Vermes, and it's frustrating as a fan when you dominate a game like we dominated on Wednesday night and we only get a point out of it.
It really is. And listen, I understand Jimmy Nielsen needs a rest every once in a while. I understand that Jimmy Nielsen needs a break from a long league season. But, you know, nothing against Kronberg. I know he's quality, but to be fair here, Kronberg barely gets minutes anyway. And he only had that one match in the Open Cup, like you said, against Orlando, where they lost in the third round, 1-0. And here, you nearly lose 1-0 again if it's not for that late equalizer by Jacob Peterson in the 77th minute. Still, though, shouldn't Jimmy Nielsen, shouldn't he be the starting keeper in this match?
Yes and no. I mean, I think Nielsen's a very good keeper, but, I mean, as you said, you want to get Kronberg some time. You want to see if he is the goalie that can come in and be the replacement for Nielsen when he eventually retires. You want to make sure he's worth signing to a contract if we sign him to an extension this offseason. So, I mean, I understand the reasoning behind it. To be fair, I'm not – I think on the – I assume you're leading up to Estelle's corner that led to the goal on the shot that Kronberg parried over the bar that – he arguably should have caught or should have done better with. Kronberg, honestly, yes, he should have been further back. He should have been closer to his line. And I think if Nielsen's in the game, Nielsen probably is sitting a little bit further back. He probably does make that catch or he just punches it away. And that is the problem with not getting games, I think, for Kronberg. It's the positioning aspect of where you need to be during games that is one thing he's lacking. I mean, a step further back when that shot's taken, he catches that, they don't get a corner, and they don't score off that corner. So, I mean, it's a give and take. If Nielsen goes down hurt for some reason and Kronberg hasn't played any games this year, we're throwing in a goalkeeper who hasn't played a league game since 2011. So, I mean, it's six of one, half dozen of the other, of picking their poison, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. You're definitely right there. But still, I mean, obviously you need to see what Kronberg can do in these big-time situations. But when it's really, in my opinion, though, when you're close to qualification to the knockout stage, and I don't know, probably Kronberg will still be used in the final group stage match in October, I still would like to feel more confident that you got to have Jimmy Nielsen in the net and just to at least get qualification. I mean, I know right now there has been an elimination, obviously. Esteli is done. If they lose to Olympia, it's not a big deal because they're already finished. But if they can surprise KC and get a surprise result, maybe, just maybe, Sporting Kansas City doesn't have to worry about that last game, and then you can just move on to the group stage. I mean, to the knockout stage. But, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, no, that That's true. I mean, if Steli gets a draw or surprisingly gets a win, I mean, if they get a win, the last game doesn't matter anything even with the draw for Casey on Tuesday, because we'll be 4 points still clear of Olympia. So, I mean, if Steli can somehow do us a solid and get a win down in Honduras, that would be fantastic. But, I mean, the game against Steli, it was a horrible result, but I mentioned last time I was on, two draws get us through. Now, granted, I wasn't thinking we'd get a draw against Steli. I thought Steli would be a game that we would be able to pad our goal difference a little bit for seeding purposes for the knockout round. But, I mean, it's a bad result, but it's not the end of the world, especially for our qualification. Olympia still has to come in. They, at this point, no matter the result, they're going to have to beat us to advance. Because, I mean, if they win against Steli and they draw here, we still advance because we'll have one more point than they do. So, I mean, it's still set to the point where Olympia has to go on the road. They have to get a result here in the final group game.
Yeah, that's very true. Very, very true. How about that opportunity, though, Kieran? I got to say, I think Peterson he was itching to score that second goal to make sure qualification was secured then, because, oh my God, you're getting the keeper off his line. Obviously, it looks like he picked up an injury of some sort, and there it was, clear as day, the inside of the near post, and for some strange reason, the ball just did not want to go inside the net. That could have been a big, big goal for Sporting Kansas City, and not worry about that fourth game.
Oh, that would have been a very, very big goal for us. Absolutely. I mean, I would watching that from the far end of the field, you could just, from the moment he hit it, you could tell it was going wide, which was really unfortunate. But, I mean, we had so many other chances. Bieler in the first half comes to mind, where he just tried to beat Esteli's keeper with power, and the keeper made a very good save on it, when most times in that situation I've seen Bieler not really pass it into the net, but place the ball in the net. On that instance, he went with power. And then Failhauer had a beautiful opportunity that when he shot it, he was already turning to celebrate after he had hit it, because he thought it was going in, and the Esteli keeper made another great save. I mean, he had a good night, which unfortunately we tend to do for keepers. We make Sean Johnson look like the second coming of Tim Howard every time we play Chicago.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And definitely it's going to be a big, big moment there in league action, of course. Still plenty of time for Sporting Kansas City to try and take the top spot in the Eastern Conference. I believe you have about 4 or 5 games remaining on the schedule?
We have a couple more than that. We have 5, 6, I think, actually, left still. We have Toronto this weekend, and then we only have 2 more home games left in league play. Philly next week, and then D.C. the weekend before Olympia comes to town.
Oh, definitely. And, of course, you know, everyone's been beating up on D.C. Well, Kansas City should continue the fun.
No, absolutely. And really, at home, I mean, we should be able to, and head into Esteli full of confidence, or not Esteli, head into Olympia full of confidence to get the result to see us advance.
Absolutely. But overall, I do agree with you. I thought Sporting Kansas City had a great first half. In my mind, they should have had at least, I mean, I'll be honest with you, it should have been maybe 2 or 3 nil Sporting Kansas City. They look strong. They look solid. But unfortunately, we do have to talk about that goal, because, I mean, give Real Esteli credit. Rudel Calero, right place at the right time to head that ball inside the far post and in, because I know that probably shook up the place when that ball got in there, because he didn't think that was going to happen.
No, absolutely not. And, I mean, the thing that made it the most surprising is that he beat Beasler for that ball. And, I mean, that's the type of situation that Beasler really doesn't get beat on, those type of headers. And that's really, that's the first time I've ever seen him get beat like that. And so it was disappointing in that regard. But, I mean, credit to Esteli. That was a great shot, seeing Kronberg off his line a little bit to test him on the lead-up to the corner. And then that was a very nice finish off the corner. So, I mean, credit to them for showing up and for not basically nailing it in.
You know, I don't really ask you what your if you have a European club side that you support, but I know you probably do get an opportunity to watch these UEFA Champions League games. What are the differences have you seen? Because I know this is the first time, probably in a long time, that either as Kansas City Wizards, Kansas City Wiz, or Sporting Kansas City, that this club's been in international club competition. Watching these games now, can you see any differences between the two tournaments? Obviously, we know the one in Europe's been around a lot longer, and the clubs are better over there, obviously. But still, though, what are the differences you're seeing, or what are the similarities as well you're seeing between CONCACAF Champions League and UEFA Champions League?
I mean, obviously, there's the level of play. But, I mean, the UEFA nights, and I've been in Europe I've been around some of the stadiums on UEFA nights in England, and there's just a different feel to it. Like and this was more group stage, so it was more, it wasn't the qualification levels where honestly a team like Esteli would have probably been knocked out of in the UEFA Champions League style. But I mean, there's just a different feel to it. It feels bigger than the game on Tuesday night did, or even the last Champions League game we had back in 2005 that I went to. There's just a different feel to it. It has more. It feels more electric, basically, and that's the main thing that I've seen from the being back in the Champions League and having witnessed it over in Europe. It's just more prestige, more just the fans seem to get it more. And I mean, that's not to say that U.S. soccer fans don't get it, but it's the casual fans that don't get what it can be. And I mean, honestly, the mm-hmm. Champions League here doesn't have the high-profile clubs that come in here. I mean, yeah, if we advance, we might be a Mexican League team, and that would be a little more high-profile, but not in the same regard that that a knockout phase game of Juventus versus Barcelona would have, that sort of thing.
Right, absolutely. But I guess while Kansas City is still in a comfortable position, what would you like to see Vermees change up? Because I know you said this before, you know, you're taking on inferior competition. It should have been, I'm not saying it should have been a cakewalk out of the park. What do you want to see Peter Vermees change in that final group stage game?
I mean, I'd like to – there's a lot I'd like to see him do. What do I think is most likely for him to change? I'd like to see him put a different emphasis on our attacking mentality. I mean, in the first half against Esteli and in the first half against Esteli the first time we played him, we were playing so many crosses in, and Esteli is not a tall team, especially defensively. And we were crossing balls in from Zuzi and from Saad to Bieler, and Bieler's not a target forward. I mean, the first half, both games against Esteli were just screaming to start CJ Sapong at the center forward position. And if we're going to continue to play the crosses in, I really want to see Sapong or even Bunbury get the start against Olympia, just because it gives us more size up top. It gives us a target to shoot for on those crosses, and instead of hoping that the ball will fall to Bieler's feet and he'll knock it in, or it'll go back post and Saad or Zuzi or somebody will be there to drive it home. I want to see us, if we're going to play that system, which I don't see any reason why Vermees is going to change it, I think we need to play personnel that fit that type of play, and we're not really doing that.
All right, Kearney, listen, thanks a lot for joining me tonight. Look, one step closer to the knockout stage, and good luck with that, and good luck with the rest of the league season. I'll have you back on shortly and soon.
Sounds good, Daniel. Talk to you later.
Thank you very much. That's Mike Kuhn from Down the Byline blog as he talks about Sporting Kansas City and their situation. Now joining me at the moment is Lisa Erickson from Centerline Soccer and Quake Rattle and Goal. We're just waiting on, once again, Arcadio Marcuzzi from Le Footer. And Lisa, while you would have to say that San Jose, the Quakes, they really, really needed to come back. They really needed this game. And they proved it, even though they got one more game at home against Herdea towards the end of the group stage week in October. You really needed this home game, and you really needed these 3 points against Montreal.
Oh, yes. I must say that is a true statement, that basically the Quakes would have been completely out and in disrepute if they wouldn't have pulled off a decent result, and I'm so happy that they were able to do that.
Oh, absolutely. And I got to say, though, that first attempt, that first goal really came out of nowhere, I thought, because obviously no one from Montreal was expecting it. And especially everyone from Montreal back in Montreal wasn't expecting that ball to just – I don't know, was it a deflection? Because somehow it just gently dropped right past the keeper and into the net.
For Wando, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Dan Gargan, had that throw-in, which he was – amazing on both throw-ins because he was integral in a couple of the goals. Then you had it went directly to Linhart, and Linhart knew what to do. He knew just to hand it off to Wando, and it did and rolled. It was very surreal just to see how slow it rolled into the back of the net. And so I was shocked but very happy.
Absolutely. Joining us now from Le Footer all the way from Montreal, Arcadio Marcuzzi. Arcadio, the way Montreal started the season, I thought that they were going to be at least favorites to get out of the knockout, get out of the group stage and get into the knockout rounds. And all of a sudden now it fell apart. I mean, I know it was a bad result over in Central America, especially against Herdia, where they probably should never have lost 1-0, and they shouldn't have gone down to 10 men, and I'll agree with you, down in Guatemala. But this result in San Jose was just absolutely dreadful.
Yeah, hi guys, how you doing?
All right.
Tough break in Guatemala. I mean, of course, the Impact should have deserved at least a draw, even if they didn't play too good. I think 1 point in Guatemala would have been a big result. Unfortunately, in San Jose last. Wednesday they didn't show up. The team just didn't show up. They had a couple chances in attack, but attacking wise, but they couldn't capitalize. And then a couple of big mistakes from the defense cost us the game. And I mean that's the way Montreal played against Columbus in the second half of last Saturday's game. So. I mean, it's a flaw that the team will need to address as soon as possible, because even if we're Montreal is still doing good in the standings in the way to the playoffs, it's not going to be something that the team could be able to deal with once the playoffs are there, because it doesn't forgive.
No, it really doesn't. And Lisa, just to say, like we've said before, the Earthquakes really needed this match, and they came out firing just as Montreal was at the start, but then all of a sudden just San Jose was able to get that lucky goal. And then when the second half got underway, and give credit to Marvin Chavez on that rebound. What a rip. 56th minute. I mean, that one, I didn't expect that to go right into the upper deck, or at least into the top shelf. That was a fantastic rebound rip.
That was amazing. As I said, if you look at Marvin Chavez, when he is actually in the starting lineup with the Quakes, not suspended, not injured, not on international duty, the Quakes win. So if you want to know who I think the man of the match or the man of the hour or the man of San Jose is, it has to be Chavez, because he just has, I mean, that goal was shockingly beautiful and amazing. Sorry, Lafitte.
No, it was. It was a beautiful goal. I mean, of course, being from Montreal, that result was very disappointing. But at the same time, as a soccer, as a football fan, I mean, I can do nothing but appreciate, you know, such displays. And that goal, I mean, not only was a beauty, but just got, you know, the legs of the Montreal Impact. And from that moment on, we felt that they were never going back into that game.
Right.
Yeah.
It was definitely amazing on that one.
Oh, no, exactly. It was amazing. It's you know, a goal like that by Marvin Chavez, just how it deflates the opposition so badly, whether it's at home or on the road, it doesn't matter. Because, you know, once again, Montreal had an opportunity to try and level the match, and unfortunately that opportunity got taken away. But, you know, I guess credit to where credit is due, even though Frankie Yallop is no longer the head coach of San Jose, the interim at the moment, he seems to be, I mean, I would have to say your interim manager seems to doing things right at the moment, even though you're in eighth place in the West. But, you know, does he need more help? Does San Jose need more help? I mean, you know, I would like to think that Mark Watson might need some more help during the winter window, you know, if he does get the full-time job, Lisa.
Right. You have to say, yeah, he definitely managed the game really well. He understood the subs. I think I remember the quote from after the first time that the Quakes went up to Montreal, he was surprised that Chalabon went and played a lot of their starters. He was expecting Montreal to play their B squad to C squad, and so that's what he came to Montreal with and rested most of his main players. So this time he decided, you know, just to go for it, which was nice. I mean, it helped that Chavez and was Linhart were not able to play over the weekend against Vancouver. So they were fresh. And so, yeah, it was great as a fan of the game to see that they took it seriously enough to play a lot of the main guys. And for once, it was very nice also to see that David Bingham had a clean sheet, because with him being the backup keeper, I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, absolutely. And Accardio, you know, Schellenbaum has done a great job so far with Montreal. I mean, you can't really take anything away from him. He's done a fantastic job managing this side. But the way you started off the season, do you see – it's not so much cracks in – the way Montreal plays, but do you see some maybe some of the players that are on the roster that maybe they need younger players?
Well, yeah, as you mentioned, it's been a great season so far for a second year MLS team, of course. And yes, Marco Schalabom is a big part of that success. But the MLS season, it's long, it's difficult. And we start to feel that, yes, this team, this Montreal team is old. It has a lot of experience. It can be, a lot of positives from having guys like Devay, Onesta, Ferrari, and so on. But, I mean, at some point, physically speaking, it's a flaw. And, Chalabon tried to play some youngsters, some homegrown players. We saw that Guatemala, unfortunately, the kids didn't show up, you know, didn't have good games, I mean, which is normal. We can't blame them for that. It's unfortunate, but the matter of fact is that, unfortunately, the Montreal Impact doesn't seem to have the depth that it would require to be a contender in both ends of, like, MLS and CCL. So that's one thing that we should get better. Another huge factor, I mean, that it's also very unfortunate, is that Montreal acquired 2 months ago Hernan Bernardello and the Argentine and Adrian Lopez, the central defender from Spain, which were big signatures from thinking forward about the Champions League. And unfortunately, those two got injured in within the last weeks. So that didn't help in terms of depth, you know, of the squad. So that's a major flaw right now for the Impact. Is like the options are very limited, and when some players get the chance to shine, they don't, you know. So that's the major thing that they should improve within the next week.
Yep, absolutely, and we'll see what happens there. But Lisa, as the season is, the regular season is nearly winding down for San Jose, what do you think is the targets for this club for next year? Because obviously, you know, we've seen it before. Even years, they look unstoppable. Odd years, mm-hmm. you don't know what's coming because you think
exactly.
they're going to, you know. And so what do you think this team needs to do? What do you think the club needs to do? Because obviously, I mean, look, you need Wando, you need Lenhart, you do need Gordon out there, and, of course, mm-hmm. John Bush to be in net. But the question is this, do you have to shore up everywhere else?
I think there definitely has to be some shoring up. I mean, the back line, due to injuries for a lot of the like Nana Adekora, the Canadian, he's been out, and I think Jordan Stewart came in, and he's a great acquisition, and I hope that he stays through next year. But there's definitely some changes that have to be made, and hopefully for the good, and we'll see where it goes. I mean, they need some more younger players who get the time and who can add to that depth and also keep the experienced players, you know.
Mhm. Yeah, definitely. We'll see what happens there. And Acardio, I talked with Mike Kuhn from Kansas City about, because they had a 1-1 draw with Real Esteli, and they got scored on first before Jacob Peterson equalized late in the second half, because I know – I mean, look, I'll be honest with you right now, Cardio. I did pick Montreal to get out of the group. I picked them to get out of the group. I had picked them to go to the knockout stage. And just to see them play the way they did, but it's not just that. The backup keeper was in net. Did you probably feel maybe Troy Perkins, he should have been starting this match? And I know it's a long, grueling season in Major League Soccer. But do you feel maybe Troy Perkins should have started this match to make sure that Montreal had a better chance to win this?
Well, yeah, the goalkeeper situation in Montreal is a bit particular in that sense that Evan Bush is a great goalkeeper that could be a starting keeper in a handful of teams in MLS, I'm quite sure. And he's young, he's promising, and he's been very patient as well since the Impact went up in MLS. So I think it's a little reward for him to play to be the goalkeeper who plays the Canadian Championship and who plays the Champions League. So yes, maybe the club would have a better chance with Troy Perkins firing the net. But no way was Bush responsible for any goals the Impact gave out so far in the Champions League. So maybe in a psychological point of view, yes. Say in a practical way, Evan Bush, is a very, very solid goalkeeper.
That's good. Okay, we're going to reverse the rotation here because I want to go to Arcadio first because at the moment, San Jose's in second, Montreal's in last. Heredia, I don't know how they were able to beat you guys with those one. I mean, it was only one goal that they scored against both your sides, and they're in first place. But Acardio, obviously, they're going to be coming to Stade Saputo on the 24th of this month. And right now, it's a -3 differential. You have 3 points. I mean, obviously, you got to win this, but you're going to have to – I mean, Montreal has to score a lot more, maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 goals against the Heredia mm-hmm. side. It's probably going to be, let's be honest, they'll probably take the draw, but and they'll probably park the bus in front of the net. But what does Montreal need to do to really throw Heredia off their game?
Well, it's a very, very difficult step that the Impact needs to take in order to have a chance to go through. It's very unlikely that's going to happen. But yeah, I mean, the chance is there, and so the team has to think about it and to make sure that they do everything they can to make it happen. So what they need to do is to go out hungry to score at least two early goals in that game and maybe open it up a little bit, put pressure on Heredia. Heredia is a very small club, you know. It's their first international experience as a club. So for them, maybe being in Canada, playing a game, you know, late September should be a bit cold for them. Maybe it's going to be a factor that's going to play in favor of Montreal. But at the same time, I mean, like you said, you know, Montreal needs 6-7, depending on the other results, but they need a handful of goals, so it's going to be difficult. And even if they manage to score a good amount of goals, it would always depend on the other results. So it's unfortunate that right now their fate is not in their hands. They had a squad strong enough to make it through, I believe, but fortunately, it didn't happen like that, you know. As you mentioned, the loss in Guatemala City was key in that put them in that position. So it's very unfortunate, but I don't see Montreal going through, unfortunately.
Well, we'll see what happens on the 24th in Lisa for San Jose. Obviously, I know you'll be rooting for Montreal, as you are, of course. You love Montreal just as much as I love Montreal. Of course, you speak the language, and I know you both of you will be talking French later when you're off the air. But
we could do it on the air, you know.
Well, I know, but the only people that would understand it is you, Acardio, and anyone from Montreal. So that none of my other listeners would understand it. But don't get me wrong, I would allow it. It's not a big deal. I would allow it. But, you know, I do have an audience to take care of, unfortunately. But, and of course, the only thing I can probably count is 1, 2, 3, and that's as far as it is for me. But, if Montreal does the job against Heredia, what are you hoping that the Earthquakes can do to knock them out? Because I would still assume that a draw would be very big for Heredia to get out of the group stage and go into the knockout rounds.
Yeah, so the fate of Montreal is not in their hands, but the fate of the San Jose Earthquakes is definitely in Montreal's hands. So I'm hoping that the love of Montreal will be reciprocated and the Impact will at least beat Heredia. And so then it will make life for the Quakes a lot better, because basically if Heredia gets a draw or a win, they're through. Quakes and Montreal are out, and there's nothing the Quakes can do. But if Montreal does win, then definitely I think it is a very good shot that the Quakes will go to out of this group round. And it was very nice to see that the Quakes, who had not scored more than two goals all season in any match, was able to get those three goals and put themselves into this position. I don't see Heredia coming into Buckshaw and getting points. I think they're just not going to be able to do that. Just like you said that Montreal is going to be cold, San Jose will not be a warm and happy place at the end of October. It might not be as cold as Montreal, but it will be decent. And so I think it will be a great, great matchup. So come on, Montreal, do it. Beat them. Beat them.
Well, yeah, I mean, Montreal has all the tools to win that game, and I truly believe they will win that match. I don't think that it'll be enough to go through. I certainly hope so, but it seems unrealistic to me. But I'm pretty sure that Heredia won't leave Montreal with any points in the bank. So rest assured that. And I also think it's a matter of pride as well. Montreal has been playing well. There's a lot of veterans in that team, very, very focused on winning. So I truly believe that they're going to come out strong in that game and prove that, we didn't do as well as we thought that we're going to do, but we still can manage to win against Heredia and Montreal.
Right. Whereas for us, by then it's the same week that the season ends for MLS for the Quakes, because I really don't think they're getting into the playoffs at all. It'd take a miracle and they'd have to win out. And so that week, I think Mark Watson will probably make the CCL game be the big game, because they have something to play for. Whereas that Saturday afterwards against Dallas, they don't really have anything to fight for. Except for pride and a few points, you know, for the standings. But whereas the CONCACAF Champions League game has something on the line. So I would bet you anything that on that Tuesday or Wednesday, I don't know which day it is, the 24th, that you'll see Mark Watson put out most of his starters.
Go ahead,
Daniel, sir. I was going to say, you know, I agree with Lisa. I think we're going to wait and see what's going to happen with your game against Heredia, and hopefully it'll be a filling result, and pride will definitely be on the line. But I wanted to ask you, though, I mean, when I saw Montreal winning the Canadian championship, and right away, I have to admit this, Arcadio, I was thinking back to the first time Montreal, when they were in the lower levels of U.S. Soccer Second Division or USL First Division, I did imagine that wonderful night at the Olympic Stadium against one of the Mexican sides, and Santos Laguna, and you know, and it was just I was thinking back to that wonderful evening in the quarterfinal first leg, and then I'm thinking to myself, you know, if at the time I thought Montreal, and no offense, Lisa, I mean, I thought Montreal was going to basically tear Heredia apart down in Guatemala City. But,
me too.
But I'm telling you, I had visions of that night at Olympic Stadium when this tournament from Champions Cup became the Champions League. I was envisioning a great first leg quarterfinal back at the Olympic Stadium, Arcadio. I'm not going to lie.
Well, yeah, I mean, we were a lot in Montreal envisioning that when Montreal won the Canadian Championship. It's always that memory is still very strong in everybody's mind. You know, it's one of the biggest moments of the club's history, if not the biggest. So yeah, we're all looking forward to relive such thrill. The thing is now, I mean, playing in MLS, as I said before, to be able to play in both tournaments and do well, you really need to have a solid squad, a very deep deep formation. So it's not the case right now, and realistically, we would have loved to see more starting players playing in the Champions League. Maybe De Valle traveling to Guatemala would have made a difference, you know. But unfortunately, Schalibom needed to rotate, needed to manage his squad, because clearly the priority is the MLS, is making the playoffs, and which I think is a very good thing. But of course that memory from 2009 CCL was amazing. And very special, because it was right the year when we started talking about maybe going into MLS. So it was like a perfect timing to shine in North America, to show our colors and to show the world, or to show the CONCACAF, that Montreal is there and that we were ready to make that big jump. So, yeah, it was amazing times. Unfortunately, I don't see that happening this year, but who knows? We'll see on the 24th.
Well, just so you know, you had to understand that for Quakes, it was a true CONCACAF lineup that Mark Watson put out, so you really didn't have a chance, because you had Mexico, El Salvador, Honduras, and USA all represented in the middle field. So really, that's what caused you guys to lose, because we were the CONCACAF Champions League All-Star
representatives. Of course. Well, that's a good fair point, you know, and it's good to see that kind of diversity in one team, but also in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I guess CONCACAF All-Stars trumps Italians.
Italians, yeah, and young Argentines, yeah.
That too, yeah, exactly. No. I mean, I'm not going to go there. I try not to go that route. I mean, Lisa can do whatever she wants. They won, I know, but still, I personally will not go that route. But of course, the idea is to develop strong French Canadians for their hometown club in Montreal, obviously. And I think it's great what's going on in Montreal. I think it's also great what's going on in San Jose. Obviously, San Jose has an opportunity, obviously, through Montreal. If Montreal can find a way to knock down Heredia, let me ask you guys this question. And obviously, I'm going to go with Lisa first. Because like we have our, you know, European club sides. I mean, I don't know if Cardio has a Ligue 1 side that he favors a lot, but but I will say that I do like PSG, and I've liked them ever since I found out I do like PSG because I have relatives in Paris. Haven't been to a game yet, but I will one day, I promise. But Lisa, you've seen what are the differences or the similarities you've seen between CONCACAF Champions League and UEFA Champions League that you like to say that you've seen?
Oh, other than the refereeing, I mean, it's just different. You think that in UEFA, all the pitches are actually really nicely groomed, and you're in the nice stadiums, and you know you're in front of thousands and thousands and thousands of fans, and so a lot of the players that are there, you know, that's what they're used to. That's nice. CONCACAF, it's different because they're going to a different country in South America or Central America, sorry, or the Caribbean. It's, you don't know what you're going to have as a pitch. You don't know, you know, how, what to expect. The traveling is, you know, a little bit different. The hotels, the food, the transportation versus in Europe. Europe, it's very, very close to get to things for airplanes. Here it's a little bit longer. I mean, I don't know how long it took for Montreal to fly down there, but, you know, so there's a lot of differences if you're looking just at the economics and what the economics of those countries bring, and especially, you know, versus Canada and U.S. is similar, but, yeah, going down to the others, I think, is the problem.
And what about you, Arcadia?
Well, yeah, I think Lisa made very good points about the differences in between the CONCACAF Champions League and the UEFA Champions League. And just to answer her question, it took 5 hours and a half of from Montreal to Guatemala City. I traveled with the team for that game, so it was quite an experience covering that event. Unfortunately, we didn't get a result. I couldn't see a goal from Montreal in Guatemala, but all in all, it was a great experience traveling with the squad. But UEFA is just that one of the biggest difference to me is that UEFA, even the smallest teams in the Champions League are well-renowned clubs worldwide, opposing to maybe the CONCACAF Champions League. That the smallest clubs that make it there from smaller countries, you know, even the Caribbean, are not very do not have like a big reputation, you know, in Canada or the States. We don't hear much from them. They don't have much press, much coverage. So it's hard. I mean, down to Guatemala, we didn't know much about Heredia. I had the chance to talk with a couple of colleagues from Guatemala, get a couple of insights, but all in all, I mean, it was an unknown territory, and I think that's the beauty of the CONCACAF Champions League is that we discover a lot of clubs, we discover a different type of soccer, a different way of living soccer as well in different countries. So I think it's a great cultural experience as well for Canadian and American clubs.
So basically what you're saying, Arcadio, is that you are a jinx, that you flew down to Guatemala City.
Yeah, I assume that that role, of course.
Okay. Well, guys, listen, thank you very much for coming on tonight. Arcadio, we'll have you on next week. Lisa, you'll wait till October. But, listen, good luck with the rest of the league season, and good luck to your teams in the Champions League. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Daniel.
Thank you, Daniel, and bonne chance, Lisa.
Merci, à vous aussi.
Bye.
Bye.
See? Look what I do for you guys. Anyway. Lisa Erickson from Quake Rattle and Goal and Centerline Soccer. Arcadio Marcuzzi from their footer as they discuss everything going on with their sides in CONCACAF Champions League. And joining us very shortly, of course, is a man who is, of course, he's a staple of L.A. soccer when it comes to writing. He's a staple of L.A. soccer when it comes to covering the Los Angeles Galaxy. And that is, of course, Adam Serrano from the L.A. Galaxy Insider. There's the hardest working man that I know on the West Coast when it comes to following soccer, and especially everything going on with the Los Angeles Galaxy. Once again, it's a one-goal victory for the L.A. Galaxy as they go down, as they are in at home against Isidro Metapan. All they needed was one goal, and one goal was enough. One goal was enough for them, and they were able to do the business, and they did it the right way. Just waiting for Mr. Adam Serrano to join us. Of course, it was only one goal that got them through, and it was only that one goal that, that's all they really needed. Isidro Metapan had really nothing. And once again, the Galaxy, with all that depth, all that wonderful depth that they were able to get through and to get that big goal, all they had to do was just go ahead and play that way, and they found a way to do it, and they found a way to get it done. And it looks like we don't have Adam Serrano at the moment. We'll try again. But definitely, got to say, for L.A., ready to go here. And, once again, it looks like that they're going to go in and advance into the knockout stage, especially in the group that they're in. I mean, let's be honest here. Cartagena in Costa Rica, a big 2-0 victory in the second week on August the 20th, and, of course, the 1-0 victory over Isidro Metapan this past Wednesday, plus three on the differential. Metapan, of course, eliminated with only Cartagena's one game remaining against the Galaxy, and that'll be on the 25th next week, so we'll see what happens. So we'll see what happens there, and we'll see what goes on here. And, of course, the guy who is the big man on campus, as they say, over at the StubHub Center, of course, is Adam Serrano. As we're trying to contact him to come on the show so we can get going here and talk about what the Galaxy has been up to, of course. And once again, they are in the hunt in the MLS Cup playoff race. But once again, a strong depth, a very, very strong depth for the LA Galaxy. As, in the starting 11, there is no Robbie Keane. There is no Landon Donovan. And, Robbie Keane is on the substitutes bench. But no Landon Donovan at all, gets the night off. And who would have thought Laurent Courtois in the 6th minute was all the LA Galaxy needed. But once again, look who's on this team. Pablo Mastroeni, Michael Stevens, Brian Rowe, the backup keeper, of course, taking over there. Brian Perk, the third stringer. of course, Brian Perk, one of those back third stringers right there. Jaime Pinedo, who is the new starting keeper for the LA Galaxy, gets the night off. One of those things where you just got to say that the Galaxy, right on cue, right on time, and everything that goes on is just absolutely fantastic. It's what you expect from Bruce Arena. Did a great job. The starting keeper was Brian Rowe. Had some tough moments later on in the match, but once again, it was just one of those things where Isidro Metapan could just do nothing. He could just do nothing at all. Pardon me, the club just couldn't do anything at all. Solid defense from the Galaxy, and just one of those times, once again, that Galaxy, they're a strong side. I mean, they're building from within. They know who to pick up. They know what to do. And it's just
Five
one of those things where
available.
Well, it looks like we might not get Adam Serrano. He's very busy over there in Los Angeles. Very, very busy. And it's just one of those things where, once again, I think they're going to get out of the group stage. And it looks like they're, the way the schedule is in favor of them, the way that everything is in favor of them, it looks like it's going to be, once again, another big-time moment for the Galaxy that they're going to advance into the knockout stage next this coming 2014 in March. So once again, it's just going to be another, another one of those fun things in L.A. Another trip to the CONCACAF Champions League knockout stage. And, of course, L.A. Saturday night will be at home against Seattle. And, once again, it's going to be one of those types of moments where the Galaxy are just doing something big here. And it's going to be awesome, I think, because the Galaxy will always be in the hunt. It's just as long as Bruce Arena is still running the ship in L.A. Twice. MLS Cup champions the last two seasons. And, once again, big time in the CONCACAF Champions League, as, once again, the Galaxy are just doing what they're doing, and they do it best. Domination, domination, domination. So it is going to be fantastic. It is going to be great. And let's take a look at the scheduling for the fifth week. Of course, week five of the CONCACAF Champions League, as we're waiting for Adam Serrano to show up. If he doesn't show up, that's okay. We'll get to him. We'll get to him next time. But as we take a look at the scheduling for next week, September the 24th, September the 25th, and September the 26th. And then afterwards, of course, that will be the final round of World Cup qualifying in CONCACAF. And here are those scheduled matches on Tuesday, September the 24th at 8 o'clock Eastern. Cruz Azul will be hosting Valencia. Montreal Impact will be hosting Heredia at the Stade Saputo. And once again, Cruz Azul will be hosting Valencia at the Cruz Azul Stadium. And then at the Nacional Tiburcio Carias Andino, Olimpia will be hosting Real Esteli. On Wednesday, September the 25th, at BBVA Compass Stadium, Houston Dynamo will be hosting W Connection. 10 o'clock Eastern, Estadio Cementos Progreso. Comunicaciones will be taking on Caledonia. Then at the Estadio Nacional de Costa Rica, the National Stadium in Costa Rica, Cartagena will be taking on the LA Galaxy. And then on Thursday, September the 26th, at the Alejandro Morero Soto, Aloenza will be taking on Sporting San Migliato. And then Club Tijuana at the Caliente Stadium. We'll be taking on Club Deportivo Victoria. And then, of course, the final week of CONCACAF Champions League action, Tuesday, October 22nd, for the group stage, that is, Tuesday, October 22nd, Wednesday, October 23rd, and Thursday, October the 24th. And then the quarterfinals will start on March the 5th. That's the first leg. Second leg will be Wednesday, March the 12th. Wednesday, April 2nd will be the first leg of the semifinals. Wednesday, April 9th, the second leg of the semifinals. And, oh, on my birthday, Wednesday, April 23rd will be the first leg of the final. And then on Wednesday, April 30th, the second leg of the final. So it will be fun. It will be interesting. And all these games in 2014 in the knockout stage will be in March, April, on Wednesday, depending on how many games, probably Tuesday, Wednesday, or Wednesday, Thursday. We'll see what happens, but it should be exciting. I know I can't wait to see who's going to advance. Should be a lot of fun. Should be exciting. We're going to try once again Adam Serrano if we can. Let's see if we got him now.
0315.
No, we don't have him there. Let's try one more time. We'll try one more time if we can. And once again, he's got a lot of stuff going on. He's very, very busy. Very, very busy guy. Believe me, I've seen his workload. He's shown it to me. Very, very difficult when he's working really hard. Try one more time. If we try and get him, if we can, and it's not, then we'll just try and get him next week, and hopefully he'll be ready. But anyway, you know, as we always talk about these clubs in MLS and what's going on in MLS, we also have to discuss what goes on in Mexico as well. Of course, joining us very soon will be John Jagu, who covers everything in Mexico and the Liga MX, as well as the national team for Mexico. And, you know, I know this is a Champions League show, but I do want to talk a little bit. We got some time here since it looks like Mr. Serrano is not available to come on tonight. But definitely, well, maybe we have him. Let's see here. Nope, no, we don't have him. And that's okay. No problem. Try and get him next time if when we do. You know, I don't want to toot my own horn here because I did have that funny feeling once again Mexico was going to lose at home because I thought Honduras probably had a great game plan. And even though many have said, you know, Mexico still has an opportunity to qualify, and it looks like Victor Vucetic, who is now the head coach of the Mexican national team, and if he is the guy to save this World Cup qualifying campaign for Mexico, and he's bringing back Rafa Márquez, we'll see what happens. Is it enough to save them to get into the playoff against New Zealand? Because that's what the reality is right now, I guess. The playoff, or the reality, or the scary reality is on the outside looking in. I personally don't know what's going to happen. We will see what's going to happen. But one thing is for sure is that it's going to be really, really interesting to see what is going to happen when a moment like this comes around. I mean, when was the last time, which of course was England in the 94 World Cup here in the U.S., that they didn't qualify? And you never ever thought you would ever say, well, I don't know if Mexico is ever going to qualify for 2014. That is the big question mark. Will Mexico qualify for 2014? I don't know if that will happen. Some are saying it's going to happen. They still have that chance, two games left. But it's really, really difficult to see what's going to happen. I'm not a, I'll be honest with you, I'm not Kreskin. I'm not a mind reader, nor am I a guy that looks into the future. But I will say this. I did have a funny feeling that it was going to happen when Honduras came to Azteca. And it was a bit difficult to see it, but you know what? It did happen. And we'll definitely, you know, see what will happen as we continue on here with World Cup qualifying. Of course, we always give time to talk about the clubs in Mexico when we talk about the CONCACAF Champions League. And to talk about those clubs in Mexico, of course, my good friend John Jagu, who covers Liga MX and the Mexican national team on Big Soccer. John, good evening, and how are you tonight?
I am doing great, Daniel. Thanks for having me on. It's been quite a day down here in Texas. We've had just a ton of rain, but Lord knows we need it, so hopefully we'll have another day like this tomorrow.
There we go. That's always great to hear. Well, John, once again, you know, the clubs that perform from Mexico League MX, they do a job again. They always dominate. And I have to say, and going to a team once again, I think the one team that really has me going here that I love to watch is these teams that are probably more familiar in Mexico than they are in the U.S., especially like Toluca. I mean, they put on a clinic against Caledonia that they knew they had to go out and dominate. And a 5-1 drubbing is just what they needed, I believe, to officially get themselves into the group stage.
Yeah, I think that they set out to, you know, obviously to win the game. And like you said, I mean, they just stepped on Caledonia's neck pretty early and were able to secure the win without really breaking that much of a sweat. You know, they did what they wanted to do, and, you know, obviously they've taken control of their group. And, you know, it looks like it'll just be just a mere formality when Comunicaciones plays them, you know, barring some, you know, bizarre miracle. And it looked like that Toluca should have too much problem advancing in the next group. Same with the Club America, who also, you know, they have a home game coming up now. They did lose to Alajuelense in Costa Rica, and they're, probably tied on points with them right now. But, you know, again, I don't expect Comunicaciones to go into the Azteca and be Club America, who's playing very well as well. I mean, they've just been in both the local league and in the Champions League have done very well. And like I've told you before when we talked about them, fully expect them to be the odds-on favorite to win the tournament. I think that they're, you know, certainly the team, you know, right now that's playing the best brand of soccer in the tournament, and I think that as the later stages get going and the fans start to realize, you know, what they have there, I think that the Azteca will become the fortress that everyone expects it to be when their home team plays. And so, you know, like we talked before, I think that the Club America will take advantage of that. They've done a great job of incorporating their starters with, you know, with the occasional reserve. You know, they're not sending B teams, they're not sending their youth teams. I mean, they're sending top quality teams to play this. So the coach says that, you know, any chance I can give my players, you know, more time to play with each other to develop more chemistry, I'm all for it. And besides, they understand that that playing in the Club World Cup where they played before is a big, big prize for them too. So they're taking it very seriously, as they should, and hopefully. You know, if hopefully more teams, not just in Mexico, but in all of the other regions of the all the other countries in CONCACAF will follow suit.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's number one priority right there. Of course, you gotta say for Toluca, like you said, they stepped on Caledonia's throat. I mean, it doesn't hurt when there's an own goal involved by Caledonia as Nuru Muhammad puts it into his own net. So obviously, that really helps them out. Even though they didn't really need the own goal, it was wonderful to get a gift, let's just be honest.
Sure, no, it was. And, you know, like you said, you know, but then, you know, they put on a passing clinic. I mean, they were just so comfortable with the ball at their feet. I mean, they just weren't pressured. I'm not saying that they were out there just saying, like, for a little joyride, but they had a very calm sense of purpose, and they knew what they wanted to do. and they executed flawlessly. I mean, it really was. You know, they have a good coach. They have great players. And, you know, it's amazing to me how people, like you mentioned at the top of the show or at the top of the segment, that Toluca's kind of an under the radar team. I mean, I don't know how or what more they have to do, you know, in order for people to take them seriously and to consider them one of the top teams in Mexico. I mean, they have won so many trophies over the past 15 years. I mean, they really, especially since the short season started in Mexico, they've just completely dominated. And, you know, their coach is a big reason for that when he was scoring all those goals for them. But they're just, you know, I mean, they are a great team. And talk about home field advantage. I mean, they play even higher up than folks do at the Azteca. So they have a very cozy little stadium. It's named after the nickname is the Bombonera, just like the one done in Buenos Aires where Boca Juniors play. It can be a very, very intimidating atmosphere as well because the crowd is right there. You know, it's, and obviously it's not as big as the Azteca, but it's, they have a great atmosphere there. It's a lot of the folks there are I kind of compare it to Dallas and Fort Worth. You know, people in Fort Worth are fiercely they want to fiercely identify themselves with being from Fort Worth and not being from Dallas. They think that it's clearly like two separate, you know, kind of like I guess a New York, New Jersey thing. And
yeah,
Toluca is the same way. They're in the state of Mexico, and you know, and Mexico City is like 50 miles down the road, but they don't consider themselves. You know, they don't want anything to do with anything Mexico City. You know, they consider themselves, they're from Toluca, they're from the state of Mexico. This is, that is who they identify themselves with. And it's very palpable, you know, especially as they start playing better and better, that they have a very powerful home field presence.
No, I bet they do. And that was amazing to me when you're just saying, because we all know how high in the altitude that the Azteca is, but I guess, for their stadium, they call it the Bombonera. I mean, it's in a higher level than the Azteca. I mean, I find that hard to believe, to be honest.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, you have to remember the Azteca, if you look around it, I mean, it's on a plateau. So there's still mountains that are higher than where Mexico City is, and that's where Toluca is a little higher up in the mountains. So that's why their stadium is a little higher up. You know, they actually hosted World Cup games there in both 1970 and 1986. In fact, in 1970, in the quarterfinals, Mexico played Italy there and actually went up on the Italian 1-0 in the quarterfinals. And then that dreaded own goal that you're talking about earlier, caught Mexico right before halftime, and it just totally took the wind out of their sails. And Italy ended up, showing their class, and they ended up winning the game 4-1. But imagine having to play a World Cup quarterfinal. In a city with an altitude like that, I mean, obviously the Italians were able to handle it, but if you're like a team that that plays on the coast or whatever, it can be really hard. So,
oh my God, that's crazy!
Yeah, very intimidating place to play. And of course, the most intimidating thing about it is the fact that Toluca is really good. And they have a great tradition, and they're gonna, obviously they had a slip for the past couple of years, but they have they're managed well. They have a good youth system. They do very well in the foreign market. They don't go after the splash. You know, they don't get the big names, but they just get serviceable guys who can come in and contribute and be part of their system and part of their team. And that's why Toluca has been as successful as they have over the past 15 years.
So basically, it's not so much the quality of the player that comes to Toluca. It's probably their manager that has a system that's been working there for so many years.
Exactly. I mean, Cardozo is the coach now. He played there, and like I told you before, just the second leading scorer in Mexico's Mexican League history. They won a bunch of titles there with Toluca under their coach Enrique Mesa. So, you know, obviously he's influenced by that, and just the fact that they can mix the veteran players with the youngsters and the foreigners. And like I said, they just do a really good job of bringing in good foreign role players, and occasionally. And I'll tell you what, their luck with strikers is incredible. It's almost unmatched with the guys that they've brought in. Unfortunately, one of them, their last one, who was doing really well, ended up having a heart condition, and he decided that, you know what, I really don't want to overly exert myself with a heart condition in that altitude. So he was the one that decided to terminate his own contract with Toluca, which I actually, his name was Ivan Alonso, which I actually applaud, because, I mean, that's, you know, you know your health comes first, and if you think that you could be in any way, prejudiced by, or compromised, rather, by the situation that you're in, where you play. I mean, I applauded his decision, and he ended up going back to Uruguay and playing more at sea level, but, playing at 3,000 meters up in the air is a little different, so.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I mean, if it's a health risk, I mean, I agree with that, and I agree with you. I wouldn't want to have accidentally be playing in a match where, you know, maybe altitude does cause problems for the heart if you're not used to it for so long.
Right.
But looking at the standings right now in all the eight groups, I mean, obviously it's easy to say it right now. Toluca will advance. I mean, they do have to play Comunicaciones in the final week in October of the Champions League. We both agree they're going to move forward. Club Tijuana has one more match. Victoria is going to be – they'll be traveling to Tijuana, and I definitely agree with you. I think Tijuana – I mean, let's be honest. All they need is a draw. That's it. They
right.
just need
and,
a draw.
Tijuana
and Tijuana
is another place that has they've been able to cultivate a very loyal and powerful home field advantage there too, just because of the, places like that are so far away from the, what I would consider the nerve center of the country, usually play with a chip on their shoulders. And I think that we've seen that from the Cholos over the past couple of years. And, for anybody that's in Central America, that's a long trip to go all the way out to Tijuana. Cause Tijuana a long way from a lot of places. So,
God. Wow.
Well, yeah,
so
Tijuana
is why...
closer to Seattle than it is to Mexico City. You have to, they're
really?
Yeah.
Really? I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah.
See, I learn something new all the time when it comes to Mexican football with you, John. I was going to
yeah,
say
and,
this.
And
is
think
that
about
why?
It. They have a – once a year they have to go to Cancun, which I guess is like when the Seahawks have to go to Miami for a football game. I mean, it is a long way.
Oh, my God, that's crazy.
Yeah,
I was going to say this.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think they'll have any problem advancing to the knockouts.
No, I don't see any problem. But I was going to ask you this. Is that why Club Tijuana's crest has that Chihuahua dog?
Yeah, that's actually they call an Aztec dog. That's why they're called – it's called Cholos Rufles, which is the actual name. It's the Aztec name for the dog. But, yeah, but that's exactly why. That's why they're called Cholos, because they are the quote-unquote Aztec dogs of Tijuana as their official name.
Oh wow, that's crazy. But yeah, I mean, obviously they're cute and cuddly from a distance, but if you get too close, their bite is worse than their bark.
Right, and you also have to understand that Tijuana is not just popular in Tijuana; they're extremely popular in San Diego too.
Oh really? Okay, I didn't know that. That's
oh yeah,
pretty
no, yeah, they are. They, in fact, when they won the league last year, it made the front page of the San Diego. What was it, the Herald Tribune? Is that their newspaper? It made the front page of the newspaper. Well, they're very popular.
Wow.
In fact, it wouldn't surprise me at all, and I can't believe they haven't done it yet. I think it would be a great idea for them, marketing-wise, to play, I thought they might have done it in the Libertadores when Ronaldo's team came to play, but I think that they decided to reward their fans. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if they played one home game a year at Qualcomm Stadium, just because they're so popular.
I bet they fill up the lower and the upper decks.
Oh, I don't think they would have any problem. Yeah, I think
home away
would
from
be,
home.
It would definitely sell out without any problem at all.
Yeah, yeah, definitely agree with you there. So obviously, Club America will definitely go through. Cruz Azul has two games to go. Obviously, they're home against Valencia. Well, that's not that big of a deal to defeat a Haitian side, but. On the road to Costa Rica, I mean, do you see maybe for Cruz Azul they'll have a little bit of a problem going to Costa Rica? Because I'm assuming they'll play in the National Stadium down in Costa Rica.
No, I don't think so. I mean, you never know what could happen, but, Cruz Azul has just been, even though they haven't really won anything, they're just such a consistently good team. And, another team that just does real well with bringing players in. They do well on the road. It was really, really heartbreaking the way that they lost the league title in the last Mexican League, but you know, they call them, you know, they're like the bridesmaids of the Mexican League now, or the next year's champions, kind of like what they used to call the Cowboys back in the 70s. So they're just a hard luck team. But you know, but as far as you know, managing what's in front of them, you know, if let me put this way, if they don't make it out of the group, it'll be a surprise. It'll be a big surprise. So hello.
Yeah, I agree with you there, John. Listen, thanks a lot. Talk to you next week with more Champions League action in Week 5. And have a good night, my friend, and thank you.
No, thank you, Daniel, and I wish you continued success on your show.
Thank you very much. And that's John Jagu from Big Soccer. Thank you very much, as he covers Liga MX and the Mexican national team. And thank you for listening to tonight's CONCACAF Champions League Group Stage Review Show, Week 4. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much. Enjoy your football. Join me on Monday, Feuerstein's Fire Net Soccer Show. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye for now.